Across the ASEAN, only on Money FM 89.3.
Wednesday seems to be a bit more forgiving for markets out in Thailand, with the Set 50 starting things out with decent gains today, and perhaps just a little bit of optimism as Thailand moves to slowly and surely ease the current lockdown measures meant to control the COVID-19 outbreak there, with signs that cases and hospitalizations are starting to really stabilize for the better. Of course, a lot of risks still to factor in, with markets still fearing a potential second wave of infections that could bring sentiment down again. Today on Across the ASEAN, we're joined once again by Mr. Andrew Stotz, the founder and CEO of A. Stotz Research out in Bangkok. He's here to tell us what he's seeing on the ground and how he thinks markets in Bangkok might move forward. Mr. Stotz, thank you so much for joining us. I'm glad to hear you and your family are in good health out there in Bangkok, and I'm sure it's an exciting time to see some of these lockdown measures start to be gradually lifted. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Great. Okay, Mr. Stotz, so let's talk about this. Of course, as we know, the gradual easing of these lockdown measures will not mean Thailand is out of the woods just yet, but it is a welcome development nonetheless, and a sight for sore eyes for many people, not just in Thailand, but across the ASEAN, who are going through lockdowns or circuit breaker measures. But tell us, what are the risks and opportunities now to markets as the country takes a closer step to a new normal, and perhaps as the smoke starts to settle and we start to see what kind of wreckage the COVID-19 pandemic has left Thailand?
Well, I think, you know, first thing about Thailand is that we're so dependent on tourism. And so it's definitely a crushing blow, and it's a blow that is going to take a while to recover from. So I think from Thailand's perspective, we've seen the market get hit, you know, pretty hard over, compared to other ASEAN markets. And I think it's going to be kind of a slow recovery. Even going out to restaurants now, you know, the number of people that they can have in the restaurant is much lower. The potential for revenue is just lower for a lot of companies. So I think in that sense, what I'm constantly thinking about is, what is the long-term impact, for instance, on EPS for various companies?
Right. And so let's get to the earnings in just a little bit. But I want to stay on that point you hinted at and hope we can elaborate. So is this V-shaped recovery that many are really pinning a lot of hopes on, at least the most optimistic people in the markets, is this believable? The IMF fears that Thailand's economy could still be the worst hit in the ASEAN space. As you mentioned, exports and tourism looking vulnerable still. Is there any hopes that there's one economic engine in Thailand that can revive fast enough to keep the economy from potentially sinking?
Well, I think let's look globally for a second. I think you know, the biggest risk is in the U.S. To me, that's the biggest risk, because valuations are high. They're pumping in so much money. And at some point when that stops, there's a huge risk in the U.S. And of course, when that happens, it's going to hit the rest of Asia and ASEAN. We do know that ASEAN is very lowest correlation of areas across the world when it comes to correlation with the U.S. So in that sense, we hopefully won't get hit too hard. But let's talk about Thailand for a moment. I would argue that Thailand, you know, the key thing is Thailand has a large population that wants to get back to work and is starting to get back to work. And that's going to be the ultimate driver of the economy. So I think that my feeling is that we start to see things recover. But we have to accept that the damage is permanent in some cases related to tourism, but also, you know, consumers are not going to spend the way they used to. So anybody that thinks there's an economic bounce back, like there's been a market bounce back, for instance, in the U.S., I disagree with that.
So no revenge spending, for instance, in Thailand, like we're seeing in China at the moment. That's based on what you're saying.
Well, I think that, you know, China is a massive economy. And it was only one province that was crushed with this COVID. Mm-hmm. And we can see, if you look at the other provinces, Shenzhen and Shanghai and some of the others, they are back up and running. So, and they have a massive engine. And, you know, it's funny because, JP, it's like the Chinese are the capitalists of the world nowadays. They want to get back to work. Whereas the U.S., I would say, is much more inclined not to get back to work.
Actually, let's stay on this point for a little bit here, Mr. Stotz. The debate now is, do we get back to work to save the economy or keep people locked down because of public health issues, which could also have some negative economic feedback? But do you think that the discussion needs to move to a more middle ground? In fact, the World Bank actually has outlined that if you do contact tracing, if you do mass testing, and if you do proper containment, and there are basically five steps, right? You can possibly start to gradually ease the lockdowns on your economies. Why do you think the discussion hasn't really veered towards perhaps a middle ground or third or fourth options? It's just an either or between the public health and the economy right now.
Well, I think, first of all, as you say, this conversation is not really even allowed. If you were to, you know, talk about it, it's going to be framed as, you know, you care about profits above people. And I think that that's a big mistake. I mean, also keep in mind, who is debating this? The people that are debating this are sitting at home on Zoom calls, working from home and, enjoying a pretty good life. Yeah, enjoying a pretty good life. But what about the people that are working in the factories? What about the people that are working in the restaurants? You know, those people don't have a voice in this debate. And what they are saying, you know, when you look at them, is like, how can I survive? You know, so that voice, I think, needs to start to rise up. So that's the first thing I would say. The second thing is that, you know, we know very clearly that economic crashes. In fact, I was reading a research paper that was written after the 2008 crisis that showed that it was between 200 and 600,000 people that died from the economic crash. Now you think, my God, how could that be? Well, people, obviously you've got suicides. You've got people can't access the healthcare system because their wealth has fallen and they don't have the money for that. Many, many things that can be damaged by it, particularly in Asia. You know, look at Thailand. Thailand has less than 60 deaths for a population of more than 60 million people, almost 70 million people. You have a higher probability of dying of a car wreck in Thailand than you do of dying of COVID. So does it really justify that? I think that that debate needs to happen.
Of course, the public health aspect of it, though, can't be discounted, though, Mr. Stotz. I mean, if people die or are struck down by the thousands or tens of thousands again, that could also lead to economic pressures, negative ones. I'm not saying that it's an either or, as we mentioned, but surely there has to be a way where you can include both sides of the conversation whenever we talk about potential policy moving forward.
I mean, I'm following the statistics that we see in Thailand, and I'm telling you that these statistics are so low that that debate would be easily won if it wasn't for all the panic and emotion that is involved in it right now. So I would say that we have to consider the idea of opening up. And this is something that we forget, is that this virus is going to be with us. I mean, it's like the flu or others, they are with us. And as we've seen from the information that we see from recent tests out in California, tests in New York City, that there's a huge portion of the population that already has it in those, you know, locales. And that shows us, number one, that the fatality rate is much lower than what people think, but that it is a virus that is in the population. And people are saying, well, let's wait for a vaccine. Well, that's exactly what a vaccine does. It gives you that same type of immunity that healthy people get when they get this virus. So it's not like we can just stay home and then it's going to disappear. It is going to be with us.
We're still speaking to Mr. Andrew Stotz, the founder and CEO of A Stotz Investment Research here and across the ASEAN. Let's shift our attention back to markets.
Yep.
The outlook for corporate earnings in Thailand remain one of the bleakest in Southeast Asia. But there are people who argue that folks should just discount the earnings over the next two quarters. It's going to be bad, and just hinge on a possible recovery, say at the end of the year or next year, as a reason to stay in the markets and be optimistic. But is it dangerous to perhaps discount a potential economic and earnings downfall? This is a question not just for Thailand too, by the way, but also for a lot of ASEAN economies that are probably facing a similar, if not identical, fate as Thailand right now.
Well, I think that, first of all, I think globally we have somewhat of a minimalization of the damage that this is causing. There are still people that think that we can switch the economy back on and it'll get back up to where it was pretty quickly. And I would argue that that's very unrealistic and unlikely. So therefore, yes, there is more downside, I think, to the markets once the reality comes in. Particularly, it's going to be driven by the U.S. When the U.S. starts to falter, when the market starts to falter and sees that they can't save every company and the Fed can't save everybody, then I think we'll see that weakness coming across. So if we look at the Thai market, let's say we're down, I don't know, you know, for the year, we're down 20-25%. You could say, you know, maybe we got another 5, 10, 20. But also remember that these markets in Asia are not that expensive. So it's not like the U.S. So the first thing is, yes, I would expect a further fall. And I think the earnings that come out over this quarter and next quarter are going to be pretty devastating. And that may wake people up. And that may mean that we do have a further fall. But the way I'm looking at it is, basically, what is the the longer term damage to the earnings of the companies. And that is really, from a longer term investment perspective, that's what I think a long term investor needs to look at.
The Thai market, as you know better than me, is very diverse. Are there any sectors that might even see more upside or less bruises from the economic downturn? And are there some that just might be risking going to the corporate or the market emergency room?
Obviously, healthcare, consumer. We have great consumer. I think we have, look at the Central Group as an example of one company of many in Thailand that are dedicated to reopening and restarting their built business in a healthy, careful way. So I would say that the consumer and the consumer-related companies are pretty exciting. You know, they are going to come back strong. If we look at the hotel sector, yeah, it's going to be hard. I mean, right now, when I look at my calculations, for instance, for someone like Miner or Mint, the market is expecting almost a 50% damage to EPS in the next couple of years. And so there are some places where we are seeing that things are going to be tough.
Mr. Stotz, how closely are you, as a seasoned equity analyst, monitoring the corporate bond space for possible warnings? Now, many corporations are conserving cash, and apparently spreads between corporate and government debt in Thailand are widening. Might this lead to possible solvency problems for Thai firms that maybe stock investors need to watch out?
Well, the first thing is CapEx plans are definitely going to be pulled back. That's happening across every sector. So I wouldn't be surprised with those types of announcements. I think when it comes to the corporate bond market, you run an interesting situation for what's going on. You've got to imagine that central banks around the world are struggling to try to provide liquidity to banks, and also, I suspect, to the corporate bond market. And what they're trying to do is kind of hold things so that they don't absolutely collapse. But at this point, Thailand has done okay in that space. But I would just say, from an investor's perspective, government bonds, earlier in the year, we moved a portion of what we allocate into government bonds just because we do see some risk there in the corporate side.
Let's stay on the possible credit risks and focus on one particular sector that comprises a big part of the Thai Stock Exchange in Bangkok, and that's the oil and gas sector. I'm sure you noted about a few weeks ago of a famed oil trader here in Singapore crashing because of the slump in oil prices. And talk about those credit risks. He now owes about $4 billion to 23 banks because of the fall. Now, the question now, in Thailand's case, are there similar worries of possible risks either in that sector or the banks that investors should take note of, either in the financial sector or in Thailand's big oil and gas sector at the moment?
So let's talk about the oil and gas sector in Thailand for a moment.
Sure.
First of all, what's really apparent is that it's a government-supported industry, in the sense that the largest player, PTT, PTTEP, PTT Global Chemical, all of these are government-related in that sense. So the idea that they're going to default in some way or another is highly unlikely. Now, we have seen that the price of PTTEP and others that are related to oil comes down, and that we've seen that all the time. So I'd say the first risk is probably not that big. The second risk is that the banks, that these companies may not be able to pay back to the banks, or the banks are struggling. Let's just say, generally, I would imagine that all banks are facing a real tough time right now, and that the amount of interest that they're receiving from their customers has probably dried up in most cases, and they're being told by the Bank of Thailand not to stop their services in any way. So you know that they've got to be talking with the Bank of Thailand about getting support if necessary.
So are these two sectors that maybe we should be a little wary of if people are looking at Thai markets at the moment, banks and oil and gas?
I wouldn't be wary about the oil and gas. I think that it reflects pretty quickly the movement in oil price. And my calculation, as I was saying before, I've been trying to calculate kind of what market expectation is on the damage to earnings. And in the case of PTT, people are expecting almost an 80% fall in earnings over the next year or two in PTTEP. And I think that that's a pretty extreme fall in the price.
Finally, Mr. Stotz, since you're here, I do want to ask you for your thoughts on the recent unleashing of global liquidity, which has saved markets from crashing. And ever since the Fed pulled QE Unlimited, you saw this bond buying rise also from the ECB and various other central banks. Has this actually saved markets from crashing, as some of the optimists have said? Or is this just delaying the inevitable? Basically, what do you make of this head-scratching disconnect?
Well, I'm generally against government intervention into markets. Even the idea of the Fed setting an interest rate, I'm actually against that, because I believe that half of our problem is that they've caused risk to be mispriced because of 10 years of very, very low interest rates. So in a sense, they've already caused a lot of the problem. And then, of course, now it's like a heroin addict, and they're injecting the heroin addict with more heroin. And you could, hopefully it works. But the fact is that it's going to dry up at some point. And when it does, I believe that the markets are going to come down and it's going to be pretty serious. I think the only real question that I have in my head right now that I can't fully resolve is, are we going to be moving into a hyperinflation situation or a deflation situation? And that question is one of the biggest challenges. And I've seen great arguments on both sides. And I'm kind of in the middle, but I would say I'm leaning towards short-term deflation, long-term hyperinflation.
So things to watch out for, not just for Thai markets, but for markets in general across the world. Mr. Andrew Stotz, the founder and CEO of A Stotz Research out in investment research out in Thailand. Thank you so much for joining us today on Across the ASEAN. I'm glad to hear that you and your family are still safe and in good health. And we hope for the best as Thailand starts to exit some of its most extreme lockdown measures. Have a great afternoon, sir.
Thank you very much.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg. Or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.
Thank you for your time, sir.